Talk given by Feroz Mehta on Zarathustra's Transcendental Vision of Ahura Mazda on Sunday, November 12th, 1978. Mr. Chairman, ladies and gentlemen, Zarathustra prays with uplifted hands and deep humility, I beseech, O Mazda, the abiding joy of thy Holy Spirit. Grant that I may perform all actions in harmony with thy divine law. And I pray for the wisdom of thy good mind, so that I may comfort the world's soul. O Lord of life and wisdom, may I reach thee in fullness of knowledge through thy perfect mind, and be graced in my bodily and mental life with the blessings which come from fulfilling thy law, through which thou dost lead all thy pure devotees into light. Mazda Ahura, I shall weave songs of praise for thee, as was never done before, and for thy law of righteous living and thy good mind, through which flourish divine devotion and thy infinite creative power. Answer my prayer, O Lord, and pour upon us your bliss. So run the first three verses of the Ahunavaiti Gatha, the song of the sacred creative word. Zarathustra declares in this same Gatha, when I beheld thee in my very eyes, then I realized thee in my mind, O Mazda, as the first and also the last for all eternity, as the father of Vahumana, as the true creator of Asha. In the Ushtavaiti Gatha, the song of divine illumination, Zarathustra announces, I will proclaim the primal laws of this life, which the all-knowing Mazda Ahura has declared to me. And he follows this up a little later with the unequivocal affirmation, now in truth have I beheld him clearly in my mind's eye. Having realized through righteous living the manifestation of the divine mind in word and deed, I can now see Mazda Ahura himself. In the third verse, prior to this weighty affirmation, Zarathustra says, thus will I proclaim what the Most Holy One said unto me. The word which is the best for mortals to hear is this: perfection and immortality, haurvatat and amiratat, will approach those who are obedient and reverent to my word, and through the workings of the good mind, even I, Mazda Ahura himself. And this is reiterated in the Spenta Mainyu Gatha, the song of the Holy Spirit. Through his Holy Spirit, and His sovereign mind, Mazda Ahura will grant perfection and immortality to him whose words and deeds are in harmony with the divine law, with His creative power and devotion. Kshatra and Armaiti. One other statement we must note. At the time when thou didst command me, go to Asha in fullness of knowledge, thou hadst not revealed to me things unheard of, but thou didst reveal them when? To dispel all darkness before me. Sarosha, divine obedience, accompanied by the blessing of divine light, arose within me. A few words of explanation regarding the meaning of the word obedience. It's derived from the Latin ob and audire, meaning to hear. Obedience in the religious context does not mean conformity to whatsoever is forcibly imposed upon one. It means to be in the state of listening. Listening not for a sound, a word, but that state of listening in which one's own mind is at peace and quiet and is in a state of inward harmony, so that inspiration of a profound nature, a divine nature, may enter your being. We have the word Shruti. Shruti, the revelation of Shruti, is that which is heard in this manner when the mind and the whole being is quite silent and still. In the above quotations, we have heard of six of the transcendent archetypal powers of Mazda Ahura manifested by him. He himself, as Lord of Wisdom and Life, as the first and the last for all eternity, is the integration of these powers in his own supreme nature, as indicated in the Fravardin Yasht and in the Ahura Mazda Yasht. Let us restate all seven, placing Mazda Ahura first in the list. So we have Mazda Ahura as Lord of Wisdom and Life. We must understand this is not restricted to biological life. Life in its total sense. You know that statement in the Chandogya Upanishad, for instance. Brahman is prana. The absolute all, the supreme, is life. And it is life in that sense of which Ahura Mazda is Lord. Vahumano, the good or the perfect mind. The root of Vahu is Vah, Sanskrit Vas, meaning to love. So this goodness implies compassion in its transcendent reality. There is no such thing as love in itself, which is unwise. The reality of love or of compassion is complemented with wisdom. The two always go together. Now, this is the positive aspect of love. We shall see the female aspect in a few moments. Next, Asha, divine law and order, righteousness. We may even use the word purity, the pure life. Fourth, Kshatra. This is the central feature of the seven. Kshatra, might and majesty, the power, the supreme power, which is never imposed upon the universe. It is non-compulsive, but because of its transcendent nature, it brings everything into being and allows them to come to their supreme fruition, because in them is embodied Asha, the divine law and order. The eternal order of things is inherent in each and everything and person in the universe, in whatsoever exists throughout the one total reality. This is something we do not ordinarily know. I like to call Kshatra, because we live in a modern scientific age, creative energy. The primordial creative energy, whose continuous creative action in eternity releases the entire cosmos, brings it, allows it to grow to its full fruition, and then itself remains in its own sphere of eternity, of immortality, and of infinity, something which our brains cannot comprehend. Unless and until we have some personal experience through our own development, which gives us a vague idea about what these words could mean. Next, the fifth one is Armaiti, devotion. Faithful love as between God and man, as between parent, especially the mother, and the child. This is Armaiti. And it is this kind of devotion which is completely self-giving. There is not a vestige of selfness, of possessiveness involved in this devotion. And this is the feminine counterpart of the masculine love as embodied in Vahumano. In the Kabbalah, if you are interested in such studies, you will find this same teaching very remarkably presented in a very scientific form too. The sixth is Haurvatat, wholeness. Wholeness, the completeness, is holiness. Wheresoever anything is whole, it is the perfect manifestation of the creative activity of transcendence itself. Then it is whole, it is healthy, it is holy. And in that sense, Haurvatat represents perfection. And lastly, Amaritat, immortality. Our ordinary meaning of immortality is to continue to live forever and ever in time. This is quite a mistake. There is time, and we, through our own development, can experience what we call the moments of timelessness, when we have the real mystical union with the Supreme. But note carefully, these are moments of timelessness. That's a very interesting statement, for the very simple reason that this timelessness which you and I, if we realize that state of sainthood, can experience, this timelessness comes to its end. And when it comes to its end, our consciousness is back in the world of time. But both immortality and eternity integrate time, the timeless, and transcend time and timelessness. You see, when a great world teacher like Zarathustra gives his teachings, he is delivering his teachings at a transcendental height and depth. It is something which the human brain as such and the human mind in its ordinary state of conditioning, the conditioned mind cannot form concepts nor give verbal formulations which can wholly represent the transcendental reality. If we have gathered together tonight because of our genuine concern for Zarathustrian religion, several searching questions will have arisen with regard to the above quotations. What does Zarathustra mean when he says that he beheld Mazda Aura in his very eyes, beheld him clearly in his mind's eye? Which mind? The mind that is confined to mere brain working, or a profounder, transcendental depth of mind which is universal and which is not our property? What does Zarathustra mean by saying he can see Mazda Ahura himself? Does Mazda Ahura have a shape, a particular differentiated existence? Or is he more than that? We'll come to that in a few moments. That Mazda Ahura is the father of Vahumana and the true creator of Asha. That he declared the primal laws of life to Zarathustra. In which language did he speak to Zarathustra? You find this in all the great religions of the world. They speak with God. Is God a great linguist of human, a master of human languages? These are the sort of questions that will naturally arise in our mind. Again, Zarathustra said that he will grant, Mazda Ahura will grant perfection and immortality to those who live in full harmony with the divine law, with the creative power, Kshatra, and with devotion, Armaiti. Those who live in harmony with that creative power. We, human beings, are the only creatures in this world, as far as I know anyway, who have the power to look within, recognize our own selfhood, and to say no to God, to the laws of nature. We pay the penalty for it afterwards. Some of us learn, alas, only too few, the majority don't. This is the tragedy of mankind. And this is why man's progress takes millions of years, will take millions of years, before he has grown to his full fruition as the pure and true human. We don't yet know the real meaning of the word human. What is the meaning, as I've already suggested, of the dialogue between God and man? Of the affirmation that Mazda Ahura is the first and last for all eternity? What is eternity? Immortality. What is the significance of the transcendent archetypal modes of divine manifestation? These Ameshas Pentas, as they are called afterwards, the holy immortals, are the archetypal modes of in which the creative energy of the creative power, the supreme primordial creative power, functions. Only some of those archetypal modes we humans are able to respond to, because whatsoever we do, howsoever far we develop, we are restricted and limited by our particular constitution. Our psychophysical, our material, mental, psychological, spiritual constitution. When we have reached the full limits, we can go no further. Therefore, only a certain revelation of the Supreme can take place for us, but not more than that. Let us consider together a few of these questions, keeping our minds calm and our hearts pure. I said, let us consider together. What is the meaning of the word consider? Con, the Latin con, together with, and sidus, a star. To consider means to look intently into the star. But what is a star? It's a self-shining light. Note carefully, self-shining. It doesn't shine by reflecting the light of something else. So to look intently into the self-shining light really means to look right deep into our own innermost selves. Because there, each one of us has the self-shining light of the supreme reality embodied in us. So now, that is the meaning of consider, to consider together. Please do not feel I am here to teach you. I can't teach you anything at all. I know nothing whatsoever. That is the one thing I have learned in my lifetime. And I am 76 now. The one thing I really know is that I don't know. But if the mind is open and the heart is pure, and you are always in that state of obedience, of listening for the divine word, then some sort of revelation can come. Let us note very carefully in one other saying of Zarathustra. It comes in the Ushtavaiti Gatha. Grant me through Armaiti that blessing of perfect illumination, the life of Vahumana, the divine mind, not his own human mortal mind, but the divine mind, grant me enlightenment, and thus thy devotee shall become one with thee, O Mazda, resplendent in holy wisdom. Now this is a tremendous thing to say. Man, you, I, can become one with Mazda Ahura. And this has been a realized fact in several cases throughout the ages. A man here, a man there, reaches that ultimate realization, which is the complete fruition of himself as man, the fulfilling of the word human. And the fulfilling of the word human is also the fulfilling of the divine mind in operation. Out of the unknown primordial creative energy, there emerges mysteriously the one total reality. Theistic religions have expressed this as the creative action in eternity of Supreme Being. In the Aura Mazda Yest, sections 13 to 21, in answer to Zarathustra's questions, Ahura Mazda makes several affirmations. The question Zarathustra put is this: what is the most powerful, the most effective means for dealing with evil? Ahura Mazda answers first, our names, O Zarathustra, are the most powerful means. And then he gives a list. He starts off, Ahura Mazda starts off by saying, our first name, Ahammi, I am. The supreme affirmation of the one and only absolute self throughout all existence. That is Ahammi. In Exodus, for instance, Elohim, God, says to Moses in answer to his question, Ehiye, is the same affirmation, I am the absolute all. And in the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, in the first chapter, the fourth section, the first verse, in the beginning there was only Atma, nothing else. Looking around and seeing no other than himself, Atma declared, Soham, I am. This has no relationship to any egoistic self-assertion. It is the assertion of absolute reality, the ultimate truth. Ahura Mazda further affirms, he is the whole good creation. You know how theologians argue about pantheism and all the lovely names they give, monism and so forth. Intellectuals amuse themselves that way. But here is a statement through Zarathustra's lips of that which was granted him, emerged through his consciousness as the revelation of unchallengeable truth. He is the whole good creation. Let the intellectuals argue about all this, whether this is pantheism or not. It doesn't matter. Our Mazda further affirms, he is the omnipotent, the omnipresent, the omniscient. All theistic religions have presented this concept. These terms express not only the universal inclusiveness of all existence in Ahura Mazda, but also the unitary wholeness of consciousness. This is an important point, because it is around this point that our whole development spiritually revolves. In other words, Ahura Mazda is wholly and eternally aware of the one total reality, which is he himself. Thus we sense that in actual fact, full awareness and complete being are identical. Ahura Mazda knows or is conscious of the one total reality by being the one total reality. That is how he knows, as we commonly say, his whole creation. You know what Plato said, for instance. He taught quite unequivocally that no one knows anything thoroughly unless he can do it. And we are knowing in the context of transcendence and the fulfillment of our own inner being is concerned, knowing means to be that. They are an identity. Thus, Ahura Mazda is not only characterized by Vahumana, Asha, Kshatrar, Maiti, Aurvatat and Ameritat, but he also is the good mind, the divine law, creative energy, devotion, perfection and immortality. Such is the transcendent mode of awareness of the one total reality. It is the mode of unitary wholeness. It is the mode of awareness realized and actualized by transcendence itself, by the one total reality, in and through Zarathustra, in and through the founders of the great religions, and in all the perfected holy ones, the true religious teachers of the world. This transcendent mode of awareness, in terms of unitary wholeness, together with its practical daily expression in terms of living the truly human life, which means the holy life, is the state towards which the human race has to develop as the centuries pass. But what is our actual state as we are today, after some million years of our evolution as members of the human species? If we have the courage to look honestly into the mirror of truth, we will see that as we are at this moment, we are not conscious in the mode of unitary wholeness. We are conscious of all objects only as separate things, of all people only as different persons. We are blind to the complete interactions and interrelationships between each and every single person and thing in the universe. And this is where modern science has made one of the most marvelous contributions towards religious understanding. Because during the last 15 years, there's a group of scientists who have shown quite clearly that in order to understand any one thing and know all about it in its fullness, it is essential to know all about everything in the universe. Otherwise, you can never know it fully. Thus, our consciousness, as it is now, separates from each other all things that constitute the one universe. And it isolates each one of us from all other living persons and creatures and from God. Hence, our present mode of awareness, far from maintaining the unitary wholeness of the total reality, functions in fact as the principal disuniting and disrupting agent or power. This is the real Dharuj, the veritable Akho Mainyu of Zarathustra's teaching, afflicting the life of mankind. It is our own restricted, fragmented consciousness which works this ill. This tearing apart by our isolative, separative, self-preoccupied and self-oriented mode of awareness of self and not self, of you and I, of body and mind, of God and man, of religious and secular, this tearing apart is the root source of our sorrow, our ill health, our evils in our lives as individuals and as communities, small or large. How shall we outgrow this dark and diseased mode of awareness? And let the pure and true mode of unitary wholeness, the dormant divine potential so unhappily suppressed within us, blossom out into full and immortal flowering in our daily lives. Do we know, do we really see with our whole being that Zarathustra has shown the way and flung wide open the doors of deathlessness? Do you remember that first little prayer lisped by your infant lips? Ashem vahu vahishtem asti ushta asti ushta hamai hetashai vaishta yashem. Do you remember its meaning? Virtue is the supreme good, the only true happiness, the happiness that emerges out of him who is virtuous, not for his own sake, but for the sake of the supreme virtue, which is Ahura-Mazda's divine law, Asha. Now here we have the very foundation of religious living. For pure morality is the indispensable bedrock of the holy life. This morality, the humata hukta huvrashta, is not merely the relative conditioned ethic of the psyche imprisoned within the ambivalent state and buffeted by the constant battle between good and evil, virtue and vice. Zarathustra's teaching of the twin Mainyu, the better and the worse mind. In other words, the mature mind and the sick psyche. The dualistic play of the anabolic and catabolic forces on the universal as well as the individual scale indicates his insight into the ambivalent nature of the mortal psyche. So this morality, this ashoi, does not represent a relative conditioned ethic, but as an archetypal power of Mazda Ahura, it is the divine transcendental ethic, absolute virtue, the immeasurable good, which is utterly free of an opposite, which is named evil. We must note carefully that evil cannot be exterminated, because no energy in the universe can be annihilated, but its expression can be transformed. Nothing is destroyed. That is why you will find in the Ahunavaiti Gatha, when Zarathustra inquires of Ahura Mazda on this point, Ahura Mazda says that woe will come to the evildoer, but in the end, there will be perfection, there will be redemption, there will be joy. Which means that this transcendent power which acts in eternity, which is not subject to the constraints of time, and therefore of birth and death, or of annihilation, this creative power waits with infinite patience, because inherent in the Ashavant as well as in the Dregvant is this divine spark which ultimately must come to fruition. It's a wonderful doctrine. So, the expression of any energy which is an evil expression can be transformed. When our psychical energy, which was wrongly expressed as vice, undergoes purification and is released into right expression as virtue, then the evil in us is transformed into good. In culmination, it is divine virtue, Asha, and thereafter we are Ashavants, not Dregvants. How can this come about? In the Ushtavaiti Gatha, Zarathustra declared, "Then did I realize thee as the most bountiful one, O Mazda Ahura, when the good mind encircled me completely." He declared to me that silent meditation is the best for realizing spiritual enlightenment. Here we come to the most important factor in the practical discipline of the holy life: silent meditation. The word discipline is derived from the Latin discipulus, meaning a learner or disciple. Learning cannot take place without attentiveness, mindfulness, watchfulness, and observation. The more intense the attentiveness, the more perfect is the observation, and the more fruitful the learning, the discipleship. True discipline is not blind or unintelligent conformity forced upon oneself by repressive authority. It is, in the best sense, a growing happily towards mature fruition. So, the inner spring of impulsion animating our silent meditation is no other than Aramaiti, the selfless devoted love of the Supreme. Thus we see that our power of paying attention, that is, our capacity for being mindful, is one of our most powerful instruments for salvation. This mindfulness has to be exercised continuously all through the day. It has to be free of any exclusiveness. This means that we must pay full attention to every event that is taking place, to every action we perform, to its nature and to its effects, and to our motives and desires involved in it. To every word we speak, every feeling we experience, every thought we have. The living of the holy life is the most strenuous task in the world. In this observation of our whole life activity, we must be specially observant of the reactions from our brain to everything that is observed. Such mindfulness will reveal to us what we really are. We will be shocked to discover that in fact we are not what we imagined we were like, and that our pictures of ourselves are largely the product of our vanity and egoism, our self-esteem and pride. When we truly see and honestly acknowledge the fact about ourselves, the purification of the psyche proceeds apace. In this process, we must learn not to condemn or praise, but only to observe the plain fact. Condemnation gives rise to guilt complexes, praise to pride. Without continuous self-discovery, no true meditation can even begin. In the early stages, we will inevitably experience psychological distress. Patiently watch it. Every storm, exactly as in nature, sooner or later calms down. Then we will notice that our mode of awareness has begun to change. There is a certain peace, an inner poise, and our perceptive wisdom, our chisti, as Zarathustra taught, has deepened. The states of turmoil and peace will alternate. That is the way of life. But we must persevere with mindfulness. In due time, we discover that our psychical turmoil consists mostly of the incessant, discordant chatter of the brain, the stream of thought. Thought is only inaudible speech. When this calms down, naturally and spontaneously, there is an increasingly silent, alert, and intense mindfulness. Now we are entering into the meditative state, not into the formal, verbal, ritual process miscalled meditation, which is the correspondent quietly of people who will go to the temple or the church and mumble their prayers at speed and think themselves rather holy. Our present mode of awareness thus grows into the mode of unitary wholeness. Dormant sensitivities of the mind become activated. An outstanding consequence of this is that whereas formerly we were conscious of all things only as separate, finite, conditioned and perishable objects, and of every person only as a limited mortal creature, not in communion with the total reality, with transcendence itself, now we begin to be self-aware as true humans, as the sons of man in the divine sense, awake to the measurelessness of infinity, eternity, and immortality, in which all apparently separate things and persons constitute a transcendent unity. When the faculty of truly silent meditation has flowered out, we realize here and now our spiritual freedom. The whole of life is now lived in the meditative state, whatever we are doing. And we do it more perfectly, therefore. The transformation of our isolative mode of awareness into the mode of unitary wholeness is a realized fact, which means that the barrier between finite mortal man and infinite immortal God no longer exists. In Zarathustra's words, "Thy devotee shall become one with thee, O Mazda." This oneness with Mazda in mind and consciousness, which is now a supra-consciousness, is expressed in human language by Zarathustra when Vahumano, the divine perfect mind, encircled me completely. I beheld Mazda Ahura in my mind's eye, in my very eyes. And also in the words, "Now I can see Mazda Ahura himself." In the state of union with Mazda Ahura, you become Vahumano and Asha, Kshatra and Almighty, Aurvatat and Ameritat. You are all these in the transcendental state of union. In ordinary everyday life, you, a perfected Holy One, remain a mortal bodily creature, a benediction to those who respond to you. When Zarathustra teaches that Mazda Ahura is himself the living embodiment of his divine characteristics, he is suggesting the meaning of the full fruition of the divine potential within himself. Transcendence cannot be described in human languages or constrained within the finite shells of human concepts. All that the great teachers, the living exemplars, could do for us was to use suggestive words like immortality, holiness, eternity, whose actuality we can experience through the grace and bounty of transcendence. Although much more could be said, let us now rest from further consideration of Zarathustra's transcendental vision of Ahura Mazda.